Welcome to the Agile Agenda. I'm Annette Wendelbo, and I'm your host on this show. Today, I have the great pleasure of introducing you to episode 2 of a very special 3-episode miniseries with a very special guest, namely the pioneer of the Kanban method, David Anderson. I'm extremely honored and grateful that David has taken the time out of his busy schedule to share some of his insights into the current state of Kanban with us. And I guess that nobody on the planet would be in a better position to do just that. In this second episode, you can look forward to hearing David talk about a bunch of extremely exciting topics, among other things about the Kanban maturity model, also known as KMM, and the purpose of writing it. You'll get exciting news about Kanban Plus, and you'll get David's answers to some of the questions that I have been asked over and over again about the maturity levels in Kanban and whether or not you should strive for the highest maturity levels. David, I'm sure that most of our listeners, they already know you, but in case there are a few that don't, could I again ask you to give a brief introduction of yourself before we start today's episode?
I'm David Anderson. I'm from Scotland. I've lived in Singapore and Ireland and the United States for about 23 years. And most recently, I moved here to Spain in 2018. I've been here for 5 years in Bilbao. And I'm really enjoying being back in Europe after a long stay in the United States.
Yeah, thank you so much, David. I would like to move on to talk a bit about the Kanban maturity model, the KMM. For me, it was a game changer, actually, because it gave me a well-defined way to have a conversation with teams or managers about what work patterns and behavioral patterns you would expect to see at the different maturity levels. And the KMM, it makes it so much easier to get a grip on a complex discussion about team and organizational agility, and not least to get guidance about what would be some good next steps to take. In my experience, people often think that they are more mature than they really are, and I see the KMM as a neutral way of discussing realistic ambitions instead of having emotional arguments about agility. My aim with having those discussions, it's not to point fingers at all, but to get some realism into the equation, and with the KMM, this has become possible. I believe that for me as a Kanban trainer and consultant, there's been Kanban before and after the KMM. Would you tell us a bit about your initial intentions with the KMM and maybe also the road to the latest version of KMM that I, and I guess with me, hundreds of Kanban trainers and coaches, consultants around the world are benefiting from literally every day?
The Kanban maturity model came about as a response primarily to the failure to adopt important practices that the Kanban software vendors were telling us they could see from the usage of their products, the customers were not using the metrics, for example, and more advanced features in the products were not being used at all. And this became acute when the Swift Kanban people implemented some of our enterprise services planning practices. So enterprise services planning is Kanban at scale. It's the practices you need to do large-scale Kanban in bigger enterprises with perhaps system engineering programs and portfolio management. Anything that involves an entire network of services collaborating. One of the case study examples we use is a semi-fictitious advertising agency, and the customer comes and asks for a campaign to promote their product. Well, within the ad agency, a campaign becomes multiple things. It becomes projects for, say, print media, online, perhaps a TV commercial, perhaps a radio commercial. And within each of those, there are many services needed: photography, casting models, scripting, copywriting, and so forth. So enterprise services planning is this extra set of practices that enable Kanban practitioners to do it at scale across an entire enterprise. And the Swift Kanban people implemented some of those practices and then found that no one was using them and there was no market. So at different levels of scale, we had no one using metrics. We had no one using risk management capabilities and features. And then we had no one using these scaling features. So I started to ask why. And the realization was that the market was incredibly low maturity and focused at the team level with very little focus on even value delivery and business results. So I realized that I had to take the enterprise services planning body of knowledge and just put it on the shelf, stop promoting training classes, don't bother to write a book on it. And instead, the focus had to be on maturing the market. And one of the early indicators would be that, for example, metrics adoption would be greater. So the maturity model became the focus around late 2015 or early 2016. And in 2016, Teodora Bozeva and I, she had a background with the capability maturity model and the European Software Institute, the European equivalent of the Software Engineering Institute at Carnegie Mellon in the US. And the ESI was based here in Bilbao and also in Sofia, Bulgaria. So hence, Bulgaria moved from Sofia to Bilbao. So together, we decided to look into this. And we looked at case studies and experience we had from clients and experience reports reported at our conferences. And it was clear that there was a pattern where the more mature the business, and by mature we mean how well they manage risks, how much trust there is in their culture, the aspects like this, how good quality the management decision-making is, so forth. In low maturity organizations, the Kanban implementations were simplistic and shallow. And in higher maturity organizations, they were much more sophisticated. The Kanban boards were more detailed. The ticket designs were more elaborate. There was more information, risk information, for example. They were using metrics. They were implementing feedback mechanisms and learning and improving, making changes, evolving, and so forth. So it was clear that we needed to have a codification for organizational maturity and then a mapping to Kanban patterns and practices. And if someone had said to me in 2015, you will be capable of delivering this set of patterns and practices mapped against an organizational maturity model, I would have said, I don't believe it. I think it's very difficult. It will take too long. It will cost too much. And it may not even be possible. And yet, within 4 years, we had achieved it. And now we have the second edition of the book. The current official version is KMM 1.2. We started with a community preview and then a beta, second beta, the 1.0 release. There was briefly a 1.1 release, but it was a minor upgrade, and then the 1.2 release, second edition of the book, and that arrived during the pandemic. The material became available online through our KMM Plus platform, and since then we've taken more of an incremental evolutionary approach. So newer material that's part of KMM 1.3 becomes almost instantly available through the KMM Plus platform, and it's usually labeled. If it's not in the current release book, it's labeled to say, this isn't in the book, this is for KMM 1.3. So we don't really release it in batches now, it's released more or less constantly little upgrades happening all the time. And the best way to stay current with the maturity model is to have a KMM Plus subscription.
So I guess that almost answered my third question about the KMM. I was going to ask you about the plans for the KMM moving forward, but would that then be to develop the KMM Plus or Kanban Plus platform?
Yeah, so since 2020, we've had the KMM Plus platform, and we created that in a bit of a hurry during the pandemic with the launch of the second edition book that summer. We came to the conclusion that we had to replace the platform, completely re-architect it. And in doing so, the new platform is coming online this month in December 2023 as Kanban Plus. And then within Kanban Plus, there will be different content. There'll be material from the Better with Kanban book series, my new book, Discovering Kanban. There'll also be the Fit for Purpose framework and anything we develop related to that in future, and the KMM material. So a little bit like you could have a Disney Plus subscription, and within your Disney Plus, you might also have ESPN. You can have a Kanban Plus subscription, and then you can subscribe to specific channels, the Better with Kanban channel, the KMM channel, the Fit for Purpose channel, at just at different price points for the subscription, different subscription levels. In migrating the platform, we've changed the underlying technology, and the whole thing is now built on .NET Core and a lot of Azure platform, Microsoft development tools. This means that in future, it's easy for us to add tooling. For example, we have an Excel spreadsheet for KMM appraisals. And in future, that tool will be embedded into the KMM Plus platform. So that with your KMM Plus subscription, you'll be able to use the online functionality to perform appraisals and create reports to share with your client or the company you're working. Well, that wasn't possible with the old platform. So that's definitely a future direction for KMM. In terms of content, we've been filling out the gaps. 1.2 didn't have an appraisal method. We now have that. We have to publish it. We have the tooling, but we have to publish the appraisal method. One of the main gaps we filled between 1.0 and 1.2 was we greatly elaborated the cultural dimension and a lot more guidance on how to hack the culture in an organization to help improve the maturity. And what that did is it exposed the desperate need for good leadership and leadership at all levels. And we realized that many companies needed guidance and advice on how to develop leaders and how to improve the leadership. So our current focus is on codifying our leadership maturity model and publishing the leadership guidance. So we're filling out gaps in the model as well as improving the platform to, you know, make access simpler for people and provide different access points. So if someone's particularly interested in culture, then they can access through KMM Plus, through our infographics on culture. They can deep dive straight into the book content on that topic without having to read the whole book. The same would be true for leadership. Or say someone wants a very narrow, they have a narrow question. The question may be, how do I improve trust in my organization? Well, you can quickly navigate to that through our culture material, specific infographic on trust, click on it, and it will take you directly to the guidance, listing a very large number of practices that can be implemented to help improve trust. So the guidance is more accessible, there's more tooling on the new platform, and we continue to fill out the material so that it's a completely rounded solution for improving your organizational maturity and the business benefits that come with that. The real payoff, to be able to do things at scale and achieve more value faster, comes from improving the organizational maturity. And to do that, you have to improve the culture, you have to improve the leadership. We have all that guidance now.
I really love the KMM. I guess it's the most useful book that I have in my library. It's giving me so many extra tools, but if you're looking at it from the perspective that you are saying that you are having some concrete problems or things that you would like to work with in your organization, then it seems to be much more accessible than having to dig into the book and find the right chapter, etc.
Yeah, sometimes a book has a value. If you have a physical in-person meeting, showing up, carrying the book, and then letting it drop on the table, and it's, 600 pages or thereabouts, it makes a nice thud when it hits the table. And if it's on your shelf and people might walk past your desk, it looks like there's a good solid reference that you're not making this stuff up, that there's codified material and that it's consistent and repeatable. So the physical book does have value in certain situations, but if you're looking for very specific guidance, you want sort of laser focus on a topic, navigating through the online platform is much quicker. Yeah, for sure.
It sounds like it. There's one question that I always get when I teach Kanban management professional classes, and it is concerning KMM. The question sounds something like this. Well, all this about KMM, it sounds completely great and fantastic from an academic point of view, but can you, Annette, give us even one example of a company that has reached maturity level 5 or 6? And to be honest, I don't know of any Danish company that has taken their Kanban to that level. But your perspective obviously is so much wider. So are there many organizations globally that have managed to take Kanban to the highest maturity levels, or are they few and far between? And what does it take in practice to raise the maturity to these higher levels?
So let's start at the end and work backwards. The vast majority of the market is at maturity level 0 and 1. By vast majority, probably more than 80%. And it's really been eye-opening and also scary for us. Once we've had the model and we start training people in it, it's become clear that the market was even less mature than we might have dreamed. Just taking an organization to level 2 can offer very significant improvements in their performance, their business performance, the cultural benefits, staff retention, all sorts of things. And levels 3 and 4 are very worthwhile pursuing. A level 3 organization meets customer expectations regularly under normal operating conditions. A level 4 organization is capable of maintaining that, doing it at large scale, and maintaining it under stressful conditions. Perhaps not all the time. You know, a pandemic, it happens once every 100 years, and that's going to impact business. But level 4 organizations, they're anticipatory. They understand things like seasonal ups and downs in demand, or bad weather, how that might affect their business, or stressful spikes in demand because, you know, they've been so lucky to be so popular. So a level 4 organization continues to perform well under stress and at large scale. Level 3 organizations consistently meet customer expectations under normal operating conditions at a smaller to medium level scale. Below that, you're not meeting customer expectations sufficiently. And that gives you some inherent fragility that people don't like you that much because you let them down from time to time. Now, perhaps they don't have an alternative, so they suffer. Or if they have an alternative, they start looking into it. So ultimately, businesses, if they want to have sustainability, they want to have robustness in their business, they need to pursue maturity level 4. We've come to the conclusion that level 3 is not a sustainable state. So to explain the difference between level 3 and 4, we could use the analogy of Uber when the founder Travis Kalanick was in charge, and then later when Dara Khosrowshahi became the chief executive. And for example, in the Travis Kalanick era, the entire country of Denmark banned Uber.
I know, yeah.
And that's because they weren't playing nice with regulators and they weren't respecting laws. And at the same time, every transaction, every ride someone took on Uber, they were losing money. Capital was cheap in those days. They were using their investors' money to subsidize the growth in the business, and they were using cheap prices to attract market share. But ultimately, it wasn't sustainable. If you run a business where your customers are satisfied, and Uber customers were satisfied, that meets our level 3 criteria. But if you lose money on every transaction, eventually the money runs out. And when you come under financial stress, it's likely that your customer service declines. So you go from level 3 down to level 2. Ultimately, to sustain the good customer service, you need to mature to level 4. So when Dara Khosrowshahi took over, he started, for example, playing nice with regulators and getting the license back to operate in cities like London. And that meant that they had to hedge a lot of risk, that they had to satisfy multiple stakeholders, not just customers taking rides, but regulatory authorities and laws in different countries and so forth. The consequence was the prices had to go up, and it wasn't so cheap. They weren't as competitive anymore compared to, say, the black cabs in London. They didn't have such an advantage. However, in the long term, the changes that Khosrowshahi made at Uber make them a robust business that can last longer. Now, of course, people ask other examples of level 5 and 6. We have certainly some case studies where we see companies that become the market leader and they exhibit the behaviors of a level 5 company, or they have to reinvent themselves at level 6. But ultimately, for most companies, the goal is to be solidly level 4 most of the time. That the observation or the comparison I make is, imagine the Formula One motor racing, and all the teams on the grid are not capable of winning the world championship. There are only 2, 3, 4 teams in any given season who have a hope of winning the world championship to be the market leader. And the rest of them, they're just happy to be in the show. They're just happy to show up on Sunday afternoons and race open wheel racing cars, but they want to do it in a robust, sustainable fashion. So most Formula One teams are mature to level 4, the best are level 5, but they're never level 6 because they live in this very regulated environment where they live by the rules of Formula One. They're not reinventing motor racing. So most companies need to aspire to be level 4. Occasionally, they're going to want to be level 5. And then at times, they're going to realize that the business we're in is going to come to an end and we need to reinvent ourselves. And we want to do that in a managed and controlled fashion. So examples of level 6 companies that I see in the world, the Virgin Group, Richard Branson's business, but others that are perhaps more surprising, IBM, over a 100-plus year period, they have reinvented that business significantly with a cadence of every 30 to 40 years. So it can be long periods in IBM's history where you don't need a chief executive and a leader who's capable of reinventing the company. But every so often you need a Lou Gerstner. Every so often you need a Pope Francis. Right? There are periods in the history of the Roman Catholic Church where significant change is required if the church is to survive and thrive and continue for hundreds of years in the future. So I don't think it's particularly realistic to pursue level 5 and 6, unless you're saying we want to be the world champion.
Okay, but certainly level 4, that's where you want to go. And
the evidence suggests that the payoff is huge, right? So the case studies we have where we see, say, level 1 to 2 transition, we see typically 25 to 50% improvements. When you get to level 3, the early Microsoft case study in the beginning with Kanban, that was a trebling of the productivity and a reduction in lead times by 90%+. So to go from level 1 to 2, you get 25 to 50% better. To get to level 3, you get a multiple of 4 on top of that.
It's very extreme, actually.
And to get to level 4, you at least double that again. So the typical results we see are companies that achieve level 4 produce an 8 to 16 fold improvement. Get to level 3, it's a 2 to 4 times improvement. Going from level 1 to 2, it's a 25 to 50% improvement only. That's still significant. One executive at IBM's Global Services told me, if we achieve a 25% improvement by taking 100,000 plus people to level 2, we will declare victory.
Wow, these are significant numbers. It's super interesting, and I know that these are not numbers that you are pulling out of your sleeve. They are all well documented from cases from all around the world. So the big question, and I even got that quite a few times when I do my training, if the benefits of using Kanban, they are so significant, how come people don't drop whatever they're doing and then just jump over and start working with Kanban? Yes, this is really a big question, but you'll have to wait for David's answer until the third and last episode of this mini-series. I hope that you have found this episode as enlightening as I did. And David, once again, thank you so much for taking the time to participate in this episode of the Agile Agenda.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
But before we get to the very end, let me tell you a bit about what you can look forward to when David Anderson joins me in the third and last episode of this mini-series. Next time, we'll talk about the new book, Discovering Kanban, that David published very recently. I guess that you might call it a sequel to the famous Blue Book. And as I also mentioned, we're also going to talk about why some organizations are still reluctant to go for Kanban, despite the well-documented and proven positive results. You will also hear David's thoughts about the future of Kanban, and last but not least, you'll get his recommendations on working agile in general. So stay tuned. I'm Annette Venelbo, and I'm your host on The Agile Agenda.